Ready?
Yep. Great. So I read a tremendous story, but to start this off, I have to tell everybody that I myself, probably my biggest challenge in davening is really being able to sit down and concentrate on what I'm saying and feel like I'm doing it for the right reasons. And I don't know if other people feel this way. I can daven because, you know, I learned what the words mean, and I know what I'm saying when I'm saying it. And I even wrote something up that, you know, I could give to everybody if they want, that has about to be it, that just goes through the reasons for every part of Pesukei de Zimra, right, and why we do it. And the translations, my translation, not art school translations, which sounds like they're from somebody who has a doctorate in language, but somebody, you know, just a normal person's language to be able to write it down. And I have that down over there. But my biggest problem, I think, when it comes to tefillah for me is that I feel inhibited. I feel like I'm missing something, or like I'm not able to do what I want. Because the truth is, I've always wanted to daven while clapping. And I see people do it, and it looks like a lot of fun, you know, to be able to get yourself into it, to be able to go through that. But I've never been able to, because I'm not going to do that in a minyan. And there are very few times where I'm davening without a minyan where I'm not around other people. Like if I'm in an airport, I'm not going to start clapping randomly. That would be strange. I'd be inhibited to do so. And I wouldn't do so again when I'm in a regular minyan right here. I mean, fortunately, I don't really have an opportunity to daven on my own to be able to do that. But I've wondered. Then I read this story. It was in the Torah Tavlin this past week. So I don't know if anybody read it. But it affected me so much because it's something that I've been waiting to see. And then I told it to somebody last night. The person told me, right, let me tell you. So I'm going to add on a story to this. So in Ofakim, now this is a desert town by the Negev, about 20 kilometers west of Be'er Sheva. There lived a younger man. This is a young man who had gotten married, who was not blessed with children with his wife. They'd been married for many years. They weren't able to have any children. They were living in a community where not having a child was conspicuous. Everybody else had 2, 3, 4 children, and they were still without children. So it made them feel a little bit worse. Because, again, if you had other people that were like that, maybe you wouldn't feel it as much. But for them, it was just very, very hard. So they had many years of treatments and doctor's appointments, and one after the other, it just didn't work, and it failed, and they kept going for one or the other. There were no results. So they resorted to segulas, because what else are they going to do? Any segula that they could find that had something to do with children, they got into it to be able to try to be zocha to have a baby. When that failed also and they couldn't get anything, the man became depressed. And you walked up to him, you could see that he was seriously depressed. Still learning every day, and still his wife doing whatever she was doing, but they just felt like there was something missing and they couldn't get over it. So the Rav of Ofakim at the time was Rav Shimshon Pinkus. Those who know Rav Shimshon Pinkus know that he is a thinker par excellence. We're talking about, I mean, I love Rav Shimshon Pinkus' Svarim on Chagim. I read them all the time to be able to get down. The only issue that I have is that they don't have an index in them. I feel like an index would change everything for Rav Pinkus' Svarim. He was a tremendous genius. And even his tapes, I only listened to 2 of his recorded shiurim. But he was an amazing speaker, a tremendous writer, and his ideas are awesome, absolutely awesome. So he was the Rav of Ofakim at the time. One day, the Rav came over to this man, and he said to him, I believe there's a skula that you haven't tried yet. I think I have a skula that I want you to try. I'd love to share it with you right now, but I'm really busy. If you come to me tonight after midnight, I can show it to you. So the guy was super excited. The Rav had taken an interest, and he thought he had something, a skula that the Rav was into. Rav Shimshon Pinkus was not a chassid. Rav Shimshon Pinkus was a misnagid, complete misnagid. If he had a skula, it had to be something special. So he counted down the hours until midnight. And finally, when midnight came, right when that time came, he decided, okay, I'm going to go. Right? He went to the Rav's door, knocked on the door really lightly. Immediately, Rav Shimshon Pinkus opened up the door. He said, quick, let's go out to my car. So Rav Shimshon Pinkus takes him outside, brings him to the car, and he tells him, he sits inside. So the guy turns to Rav Shimshon Pinkus, they get in the car, and he says, Rav, what's the skula? So Rav Pinkus turned to him and said, not yet, wait. You gotta wait a little bit. They continued to drive toward Be'er Sheva, right to the east to Be'er Sheva. And then when they got toward Be'er Sheva, he made a turn south and went down toward Yeruchim through the desert. Right? And a little bit further away, 40 kilometers had passed, Rav Shimshon Pinkus had not said a word. And the guy obviously is wondering, what's the skula? Where's the skula? Suddenly, the Rav pulled over to the side of the road, pulled over right to the side of the road. He pointed to the desert terrain outside the window where the guy was sitting. He pointed outside and he said, here, get out right here. The man looked at the Rav like he was crazy, right? What in the world did he want him to do? He said, Rav Shimshon Pinchas turned to him and said, right here, right now, you're going to be absolutely alone in the desert. It'll just be you and the Ribono Sholom. Nobody else is going to be with you. Now you can break down and cry real tears. You can scream and daven to Hashem the way you've always wanted to. You can daven like you've never davened before, because it's literally just you and a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem wants to hear you. In the schus of that tefillah, you'll be zocher to have a Yeshua. I'm going to come back for you in a half an hour. The man got out of the car. Shimshon Pinchas closed the door, drove away. This man was literally in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of a desert, in the middle of Eretz Yisrael. Nothing around him. It is pitch black outside. There is nothing going on, right? And he decided, okay, I got to do this. He got up and he started to daven. And soon he got into his tefillos. He screamed. He cried. Like, we can't do, because even, what are you going to scream? Where are you going to cry? Somebody might hear you. You're not going to do it the way you want to. So you're going to come running in, right? He mamish felt it. Screamed and cried and yelled, etc. Got caught up in his field. After half an hour, after he was begging, davening to Hashem, half an hour came through, came done. Rosh Hashanah Pinchas drove up in his car, took a look at the guy, rolled down his window, and said, you haven't tried hard enough. That's not enough. I mean cry. I mean daven. Beg HaKadosh Baruch Hu like you've never begged before. You haven't done it yet. You haven't gone down to the depths of your soul. Get down there and use all of your energy, all of your strength, and then you'll see a Yeshua. Rolled up the window, drove away again. It's the guy, he didn't know what to do. But this time, mamish let it all out. He screamed until his voice was sore. He was crying until he couldn't have any other tears, buckets of tears. He was so exhausted that he could barely keep himself up. And after the next half hour was done, he had sweated through his clothing. Remember that by a desert, right, when it gets to winter time, especially at night, it gets very, very cold. He sweated through his clothing, sweated completely through, right? When the Rav came back after a half an hour, right, he looks at him, he says, that's what I meant. That's what I meant. I mean that by crying. Now, I think you're ready for the Yeshua. And the way this story goes, almost exactly to the day, 9 months later, he had a baby boy, a healthy baby boy. So the way that they told in the story is, you know, in the classic fashion, almost like the Rav Chanoch teller fashion, where a guy got up and said over the story, and one of the kids in the crowd said, I am that boy, right? I am that boy. That's the classic. I don't know if that actually happened. That I'm not gonna quote that as being, you know, part of the story itself. But I sat there. So I said this over last night, and said to a guy that I learn with, and the guy turned to me and he said, you know, that's exactly what happened to me. For the day of his wedding, his Rav in Shar Yashuv said to him, he knew that he had more of a Hasidish bent. He said to him, you know, I know that people will tell you you're supposed to daven mincha with a minyan. And I know that's true. And I'm your Rebbe. And I probably should take you to a minyan as well. He said, but I want to do something a little bit different. He took him out into the middle of nowhere in Muncie. Literally in the middle of nowhere. Brought him by a certain place with a waterfall. Nothing else around for miles. And he told him, daven here. I'm going to drive away. I'll come back in 20 minutes. Daven your heart out and I'll come back for you afterward. Literally the exact same story. Literally the exact same story. And he said it was the greatest davening he's ever had in his life. The absolute greatest. Right before his wedding, the mincha before his wedding, he had to do it together with vidui, etc. But he said he never felt a tefillah like that ever. He said, but that's exactly what he did. He told me another story that he knew that a certain Rebbe brought them all out to a farm in the middle of nowhere and then dropped off kids like in different areas of like this huge farm and just said, stand here, daven here. I'm going to come back for you guys in like 2 hours. It's a little scary. That might be a little scary. I'm not so sure I could do something like that. But this is such an amazing idea. See, although it's technically last week's Parsha, and Vayetze is a little bit different, the Marav that Yaakov davens is a little bit different, Yitzchak and Rivka are the Baalei Tefillah. They are the Baalei Tefillah. Together, Yitzchak, which is 208, and Rivka, which is altogether 307. 208 plus 307 is 515. 515 is the gematria of tefillah. Without the yod, it's tough pei lamed he. When we, it's by Sfardim, Nusach Sfard, as well as Ashkenaz and Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, the fi yisharim tis romam uvid sifse tzadikim tis barach v'shon chasidim tis gadosh v'karev kedoshim tis alol. By Nusach Sfard, it's Yitzchak and Rivka. It's supposed to spell Yitzchak and Rivka. We do it a little bit different. We do Yitzchak, but we don't do Rivka. But Sfard does every Shabbos. They do Yitzchak and Rivka to cause for that to be, I guess you could say, the concept of tefillah. And the truth is, we do see the Yitzchak and Rivka in order to daven for children. They were davening, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu listened to the tefillah of the Tzadik ben Tzadik over the Tzadik ben Rasha, meaning to Yitzchak instead of to Rivka. And we see that their tefillahs were answered. We see that their tefillah was over there. In fact, Yitzchak may be the only tefillah that we see in Tanakh that's fully answered. Eliyahu Navi says, Aneni Hashem Aneni, and that is answered. That's true. But the only tefillah that is immediately answered, he davens for a zivug in the corner of a field by Yetze Yitzchak Lesuach Basode. He went out to go daven in the field, and he lifted up his eyes and immediately sees his shidduch coming. He sees Rivka Imenu coming on the camel. Right? And that was a miracle because it was Kfitz Sederich involved. There's something happening. It could be the Yitzchak is the only one that had allowed it there. Eliezer's tweet. Now, that's a very good call. Eliezer, the question is if that's a tefillah or if that's a request from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, probably, you know, sort of like a, almost like a tenai that he was making. It's the way the bakasha is what they would call it. And the Gemara actually meant words it as a bakasha. Because if you go with that, then technically Shaul HaMelech as well, maybe Kalev with Osniel ben Kenaz answering for Achsa, you know, one after the other. But instead of a bakasha, an actual tefillah, right, where we have the Lashon of tefillah, that's what we see over there. Their tefillahs stormed the heavens until they were blessed with baby boys. Obviously, in this week's parsha, we're dealing with Yaakov Avinu, with the setting sun, and thinking that he's davening mincha, but the sun sets too early, so it ends up being Maariv. And I want you to think, I want you to put yourself in Yaakov Avinu's situation for a second here. He's running away from Esav, who wants to kill him. He has just escaped Eliphaz by giving up all of his money to Eliphaz, knowing that Esav is still coming after him. He's going to Lavan, not knowing what's going to be in front of him. He's 77 years old, and his parents are not fully with him. His parents are at home, and they're not helping him more than what they can over there. He's in a scary position over here. In such dire situations, tefillah is the most effective. When you feel like there's nowhere else to turn, what else am I supposed to do? Well, yeah, that's when we get up and we daven. And we say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is what we need. And again, all our tefillahs, I don't know if they can be like that. Maybe those great, great gaonim, like the Rebbe's out there, and the tremendous Gedolei Ador, maybe they can have every single davening work that way. Maybe it can be that way. But usually it's in dire situations, and I don't wish this on anyone. I don't want this to be any way, but I believe the way to improve our tefillos and to make them real is to put some tzar into our perspectives. Then when we daven, we get up to daven, we think of something painful right before we get up and daven, and that helps. And I'm not asking. It turns a want into a need. It's no longer I want this. It's more of a I need this that changes around what it's going to be. When I heard that, unfortunately, that this friend of mine, Ephraim Rimmel, who he was a few years younger than me, but he, if anybody knows, Ephraim Rimmel is a... He was a son of one of my parents' old friends, a guy named Yogi Rimmel, who lived in a town called Neve Tzuf with my uncle, Fry. I knew him as a kid, and I knew him as I was growing up. When I was in yeshiva, he was in high school. He came to America. He was in the YU Kol Torah Mitzion, and I don't know if people heard, but on Motzei Shabbos, he was driving home. His son from a bar mitzvah got into a car accident, and his wife, who was a tremendous teacher. I remember them saying that when she was here, they wanted to pay her to not go back to Eretz Yisrael. And his daughter, 3-week-old daughter, passed away in the car crash. He and his son, he's still in critical condition, and his son was able to get out, but it's an unbelievably sad tragedy. It's a tragedy for Chicago as well, because they're related to Rabbi Sheinfeld, people know the Sheinfelds. It's not a, unfortunate, it was a horrible, horrible thing to have happened. When she passed away, and he's still in critical condition, he's still in the hospital. That tefillah that I said afterward, I felt was a little bit different. And again, I don't wish tzar on anybody. I don't want anybody to have tzar. But it just is different. If we start thinking of the tsar of others and put that into our heads, I really think that will change us. Maybe it will also be to do that little bit of Yisbodidus that he talks about over here. That idea of going out into a field and davening by yourself as if there's no one else around you, no inhibitions, nothing holding you back. Maybe that'll also help. But to bring it back to us, maybe all we need is to feel that little bit of tsar, to feel like there's something there that we really need to daven for, and that'll change our perspectives completely in how we're going to look at things and how we're going to change our way of davening. I think it's so important because aside from the obvious, when we truly need to daven, it seems almost disingenuous that we're only doing it because we need it at that time. It should be that we improve our tefillahs little by little, bit by bit, bring up something, do something every single time. And if we really, really do this, I honestly believe we won't have to worry about those sorrows coming in because we'll have stopped them from happening in the first place. We'll have allowed ourselves to be there before it actually happens. And maybe that's what it means to put yourself into it. I'd love to see where Shin Shin Pinkus came up with this idea from. I think I get the idea, but I'd love to see where this idea comes from. If anybody knows, I'd like to see it inside. But the idea, the Yisbodidus for tefillah, or the heter, I should say, of davening, you know, without a minion in order to do that. Yeah.
I mean, I heard the story.
I'd like to see the makor for them. You know, like, where does it say that that's that? Yeah.
I heard this story for about this, come out, the same exact story, except you didn't tell him to daven, you just told him to shout Abba really loudly.
Shout Abba?
Abba.
Oh, Abba.
I didn't hear anything about davening. I heard this from Rabbi Carter at least. He just said it. Because he brought the guy out in Norrisville.
Oh.
Just shout Abba really loudly and just get into
it. Baruch Hashem, Eim Hashivan Al Maisa, right? Let's not ask on the Maisa. Whichever one it is, I think the concept is still there. I just want to see the Makor. I want to find a Makor of where it comes from to do such a thing and that's going to be there. I don't mean from the Hasidim, I mean from Maimer Chazal. But Shkaich, everyone, we'll stop with this.